The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
And we welcome you back. If you're just joining us, it's been a busy one. We had Alan Blinder on from the New York Times a couple hours ago. He broke the story over the weekend with his interview with Mark Emmert on the fact that NIL now, according to Emmert, is inevitable, and he's calling on Congress to make it happen. We've talked about that considerably, and the other topic has been Tim Tebow. Surprise, surprise. Tim Tebow is heading back to the NFL, according to media reports. The report out late today by the NFL Network says that Tebow will sign a one-year contract to play tight end with his old coach Urban Meyer for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And there has been a lot of reaction to that. It's supposed to be a quiet time of the year in sports. It has not been. Let's get back to the calls and check out Jared. Well, sometimes you have to see look what you're doing. Jared is up next in Alabama. Hello, Jared. Jared, you there? I didn't hear Jared, so we'll move on. Steve is up next in South Carolina. Hello, Steve.
Hey, I just want to tell Paul I'm 64 years old. He's my favorite show on TV. I know he don't like Clemson, but Clemson about bankrupted me with my oldest son.
Well, Steve, I don't know where this thing got started that I don't like Clemson. I've had a few things to say about them, but I don't have anything against Clemson at all.
Yeah, they about bankrupted me with my oldest son.
That's what parents are for, to give up all their life earnings to support their kids, aren't they?
Right. You're right. You're my favorite show.
Well, Steve, thank you.
I watch you every day.
I appreciate that.
I watch you every day on TV.
Well, that means a lot. You take care of yourself. And, I will say this. Of all the shows on television, it's the one show that I watch the most as well. Whether it's my favorite show remains to be seen. That will come up in the memoirs. Let's get to Tom, who is in Georgia. Hey, Tom, thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Feinbaum. It's nice to talk to the most well-connected man in college football.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I have a question that I want your opinion on as far as the NIL. It seems to me that when we get in this, I'm a high school football coach, and I'm always on the kids about doing things the right way, you know, act like you've been there before, and the showboating and stuff. But we seem to be going from now performance-based criteria to more brand-based. And do you think this is going to cause more kind of antics and things that players are going to do, especially the players who aren't the most recognized, going to do something to kind of get their image out there and get their name out there? And how do you think that will affect the – first of all, do you think that's going to happen? Second of all, do you think that's going to affect the game and how so?
Tom, I think it is going to happen, and it will. And you tell – you know more than I know. But but think about this. And what's going to drive this NIL? It's going to be social media. And nowadays, if you are considered an influencer on social media, meaning somebody that moves the needle – you'll get attention. So I'm going to throw it back to you. You have to manage a locker room. Tell us what it's like for 15, 16, 17, and 18-year-olds who are all different. Some are very popular. Some are just football players. How do you deal with that every day?
Well, you know, you're right. It's managing egos. And we have a coach that goes through beginning of the ball game, you know, before we go out, making sure that everybody looks the same. You know, that everybody has that stuff, that you're not doing this or that or the other to set yourself apart. A while back, Georgia High School Association had they started doing that, and they started enforcing this thing, you know, kids diving into the end zone and, you know, doing the Heisman pose and things like that. And to me, it's just not part of the game. You know, this generation it is, because, as you said, that's social media. That's how many likes you get. That's how many views you get. And I'm just afraid that, you know, now when Najee Harris jumps over Notre Dame people, I just have a fit and love it. But is that going to come now to be the norm?
Coach, how do you manage? Do you let your players tweet about what they're doing on the football field?
Yes, sir. We do, but we also, you know, you got to educate them. And position coaches, I'm not a head coach by any stretch, but position coaches, they're going to get you Twitter. They're going to, you know, we're going to have to watch it and see and say, you know. It's not the kids, though, as much as what I've seen is when you have parents who, like, aren't happy with the coaching
right. Or
things like that. That's what you got to manage now. It's you know, the kids we kind of have a handle on, and the kids you can say, you know, this is the way we want to do it. This is a, you know, educate them as to how you do it. We go ahead and build that brand. My school, the one I worked at for the longest, it turned out a lot of good athletes. There's some of my players that are in the pros, and I'm very proud of them. So, you know, I know in college systems, you have somebody that teaches that. Nick Saban has a class on stuff like that, what you say, building your brand and things like that. At the high school level, the big programs, yeah, you got to do it too.
Yeah, to me, I think that's really where it's going to come down to, because you would think high school football, when everybody reflects back to high school basketball or baseball or football, that those coaches had control. But I don't know, because I'm not in many high schools anymore. I used to be, but it's such a challenge right now, because there are so many outside influences. And I say this because I love young people, but I don't know how you carry on a conversation with a young person nowadays, because they're too busy checking their phones.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Did you see a while back, I know you did. You remember when Scott Cochran was mm-hmm. on the sideline at Alabama?
Right, sure.
And you remember he had one of the injured players was tweeting.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that.
And he snatched that phone. Yes, sir, it is, but we kind of, once you get out of that locker room, but we lock up the phones.
Okay.
When you're going out to practice, we lock up on the phones. We don't want anybody, getting into the locker room and any problems like that. So we lock up the phones before practice, and they get them back after practice, but it is.
And Tom, I want to say this. I'm not coming down on young people, because I work with a lot of adults who never look up from their phone either. So it's not only teenagers who are glued to whatever somebody is saying about them.
Right, right. Yes, sir. But they are a little bit more peer sensitive.
Well, yeah, they don't know. They'll have a more difficult time filtering the criticism than someone who is older. Well, I say that. I'm not sure, but they should, because of their age, you're more concerned about them. I mean, I know people my age who will fly off the handle if somebody criticizes them on Twitter, and they'll fight back and like it's the end of the Civil War. But young people are just not quite don't have the experience that older people do.
Right. And you know, when you go into the business, you understand you're going to be a focal point. You're going to be living in a fishbowl, and you know they can't criticize the kids, so they'll go criticize the coaches, which is okay. You know, that's part of the job. You understand. They don't.
I'm curious about one more thing, because I asked you how you deal with young people. How do you deal with their parents? Because that's a far more complicated issue.
Yes, sir. You don't treat them all the same. You know, some of them you have to, what was that old joke? You know, I had two kids. I put one through college and put one through a wall.
I like that.
You know, sometimes we have conferences with the parents and say, you know, I understand you have a problem with this. Let's talk about it. But we also address that through Booster Club and such. You know, we talk about the first of the year when everybody's excited and you're starting up and the kids have got their equipment and they're getting ready to go out there and getting ready to start the year, we meet with the parents. And, you know, we tell them, please be please be mindful of these are kids. They may be 6 foot five. They may be 300 pounds, but they're kids. And please be careful what you put on social media. So, you know, we try to reach out to the parents, too, and be proactive with it. But you know how it is. Somebody doesn't get enough playing time, or somebody thinks somebody else's kid's not as good as theirs. You're going to have it, – it's a fact of life these days.
Well, I how long have you been coaching?
I started in 1988.
Wow, you've done it for a few years. I applaud anyone because, I mean, it looks it may look glamorous on some levels, but a high school football coach is and I have a nephew who does that. It's hard work, and you have to do it because you love it, because you're not going to become a zillionaire doing it.
No, sir. You love it. You love the kids, and at the end of the year, you know, when one of them comes back to visit the team afterwards and says, thank you for what you did, I appreciate it, it makes it all worthwhile.
That's wonderful. Well, Tom, hey, thank you for sharing it. I can't tell you what it means to hear somebody who actually is on the ground and goes through this stuff versus those of us who just sit in ivory towers and pontificate.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate you taking my call.
It was our pleasure, and call again very soon. We are heading to the break. We have a lot to do. Buddy Martin will join us in a few minutes on the next iteration of Tebow Mania. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
We are back, and Buddy Martin joins us, a good friend of ours, and we are going to talk to Buddy about the original reason we asked him to come on, but then we will change gears. Buddy, thank you so much for the time. You wrote a really interesting piece over the weekend about Dan Mullen, and it's so interesting to hear you talk about it. I mean, Dan Mullen has had one of the most bizarre years of his career. There was a lot of good, and then there was some really weird and bizarre moments. Thank you for being here, and let's talk about that first.
Glad to be here, and I know that Tim Tebow has kind of taken over the show. Obviously, a lot of people weighing in on that issue. Good show today, by the way. I enjoyed Mark Rick. The Mullen column, and I've tried to do a real honest evaluation of where Dan Mullen stands, and I'm on record of saying I heartily endorse him as a coach. Was glad to see him come. Thought he was the right choice. I've talked about him in a positive manner for 3 years on my show. And I think he's done a really good job. But the question becomes, if you're going to honestly evaluate a coach, take out all your sentiment and say, what has he done? And the numbers speak, you know, and the fact is, I looked up the records of the other coaches who were the gold standard here, Urban and Steve, and while he was fairly close to them and actually could become the first coach to be 29-5 or whatever it was, the fact is that he hasn't won a championship. And in Urban's and Steve's fourth year, they were still competing at a high level, winning bowl games, winning championships, etc. And I got to ask the question of myself, when Dan Mullen talks about the Gator standard, what exactly is he talking about? Because to me, that implies that you're taking the high water mark or the top and you're saying, okay, is this the kind of thing Gator fans can expect? And if you're talking about the best coaches at Florida in Spurrier and Mullen, in Spurrier and Urban, then you have to compare the two. And I'm sorry, Dan Mullen's done a pretty good job, done a good job, but he has not matched what they have done. Now, does that mean he's a bad coach or that he should be fired? No. I simply pointed out in the column that that's the standard, and by those standards, Mullen has not done it in year three, and therefore I made a declaration sort of the honeymoon is over. Does that mean that he's going to be fired? No. Does it mean he should be fired? No. Does it mean he should be held to a standard? Yes, it does mean that. So I was trying to do that, and that was what the point of the column was.
And it was very, very much worth reading. Buddy Martin joining us. Let me, for those who don't know, I mean, most of you know Buddy from our program, but Buddy has been a longtime newspaper man, radio, as well as someone who has written a number of books, including conversing with Urban Meyer, Steve Spurrier on books. How you survived both of those, I'll never know. But you did, and you seem like you're in one piece. But you and Urban have one of the most unique relationships. You've done podcasting with him. You've been in business with him. And we asked you the day the story originally broke about Tebow, and now it still has not been officially announced, but it's everything but the vows being declared by a minister. So help us understand this relationship between Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow.
Yeah, well, it obviously is very close, and I have had many conversations with Urban about Tim Tebow, not any with Tim Tebow, about Urban to speak of, but I know by just my private conversations and the podcast that he's always said he thought that Tim Tebow was a winner if he ever had the opportunity, me and Tim, to prove that with the right program, whatever, he felt like he could be successful. And he's not the only one saying that, by the way. Just the other day, Fred Taylor, the former Jag and All-SEC, All-American running back from Florida, came out and said Tim Tebow never got a chance. Now, what does that mean? I don't know exactly. It has nothing to do with religious oppression. Let's get that off the table, okay? But that shouldn't even be brought up in the same sentence. But you know, Paul, you've been around for a long time. A guy can get with the wrong team, wrong coach, wrong system, and never recover. Now, did Tebow have it going in Denver? Well, a lot of fans I know in Denver, where I used to live and work, thought he did. But obviously, when you get a chance to upgrade with Peyton Manning, what do? You take Peyton Manning. But it wasn't in the cards for Tim to do that. Many people thought he should have tried tight end a long time ago. I think you probably won. I probably won. He wanted to be a quarterback. And it was by his own decision that he chose to continue to try to play quarterback. And when I asked Urban again as recently this summer what he would do, because he's always told me Tim would be a heck of a coach or whatever, would you, if you had a chance, would you get it? And he says, well, I'll always think he is a winner, and I think he can still compete, but we'll see about that. But it's really up to Tim. I don't know that Tim wants to. And Paul, you said the same thing on your show a couple of weeks ago. Tim's got many, many choices what he can do with his life. And it wasn't really clear whether Tim wanted to try to play football again, and apparently he does. And Gator fans are very, very, very ecstatic about this. I mean, they're off the charts ecstatic. And in some ways, it does feel like it's the right thing. Will it work? I don't have any idea. There's some people who think it won't. Ben Troop, an All-American tight end in Florida. I do my show with Ben almost every week. He says there's no way Tebow can play tight end in the NFL. He'll get his brains beat out. So you have that. But there is something natural about this. Two guys who've done it together, won national championship, friends, and admire each other, opportunity. And if nothing else, as I wrote on Twitter today, Tebow can come to Jacksonville, wear the teal and black for a season, and die with his boots on in his hometown under hometown grass. So I think there's a natural feeling about that to some Gator fans. I don't know how good he could be at tight end. I just know he's got a heart of a lion. And if Urban Meyer believes he can do it, I believe it.
Buddy, if he doesn't make it, there is speculation that he'll still be involved with that franchise in his hometown. It's not like it's a long commute. And if that happens, then we have another conversation that will begin immediately, and I'm sure it's already began. Matt Hayes was here earlier. Not Matt Hayes, but somebody else. I can't remember who it was, who talked about returning to Florida. I asked, as you know, I asked Coach Mullen about this the other day, about three or four weeks ago, and he said that, you know, the Tebow never really seemed interested, but could this change all that? Could he end up at Florida in some way, shape, or fashion?
You know, when Urban was coaching in Florida, when Tim was playing, once I asked him in a private moment what he thought about Tebow, and he said to me, Tim Tebow could be the coach at Florida someday. He said that. So that tells you what he thought then. I don't know what he's got in the back of his mind. It was Matt Hayes, I think, did mention something about the fact that he would, you know, be a natural fit. And he brought up Ryan Stamper, who I know for a fact is in training to be somebody's general manager there. And so Ryan Stamper's there. I can foresee Tebow being player for a year. I don't know if he'll be injured or if he'll play or what will happen. We'll see. But I can see why it would be a plus for him to be a member of the organization, the front office, spokesperson, assistant GM. I don't know what, but they want Tim Tebow involved some way, somehow. That franchise, which has had such a bad run, it could really, really turn things around. Because people still feel like they got cheated out of getting Tim Tebow when the Jags had the chance and didn't do it.
Buddy Martin, so nice to join us here on a Monday afternoon late in the program. Buddy, thank you so much. We have a lot more to unpack, but we'll get you back soon because I don't think this story is going anywhere. Come back.
Sounds like you'll be around for a while, and I'd love to come back. Thanks for having me on, Paul.
Always a pleasure. Buddy Martin joining us, and we are back with more right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Been a busy show. Hope you were with us earlier when we had Mark Richt on talking about name, image, and likeness in the aftermath of Mark Emmert's comments over the weekend. We also had the writer of that article, Alan Blinder of the New York Times. William is calling from Maryville. Hello, William.
Hello, Paul. Happy good Monday to you.
Thank you.
How
so
are
much.
You?
I am well. Thanks a lot.
I want to segue from what the coach from Georgia said, a little different angle. You know, on every team, and I was active in Little League and youth football and basketball for years and years, and every team starting at the lowest level has role players. And, you know, they grow up and, you know, some in seventh grade are shaving and never grow anymore. So when they get to high school, they're no longer the stars that they were in seventh grade. And in my estimation, the problem at the youth levels is the parents, because you know, there's only one shortstop and one pitcher on a baseball team and one middle linebacker and quarterback on a football team and one point guard. And parents don't understand the real I won't say the real value because all these kids are valuable, but the real ability of their own children sometimes. I think about a couple of experiences. One time I was actually not coaching but helping with a team, and the coach's player is a 10-year-old baseball team, and the coach's son was a really, really not a good baseball player. And he could not protect himself with a glove, and the coach insisted that his son start at shortstop. And the team was playing a thrown-together, I think it was a fall baseball league, and they were playing some travel ball teams that had some really good players. And I went to him, I said, look, coach, you cannot put your son at shortstop. He can't protect himself. He's going to get hurt. He's going to get hurt badly, potentially. And then I was like talking to a wall, because parents cannot judge, you know, the abilities of their kids. And I think about kids that I used to tell my kids, look, I don't know if any of y'all will play in, you know, in high school or college, much less in the majors, but everybody will have a job interview or a college interview. And that's what we're preparing you for, is dealing with adults and umpires and, you know, and teamwork. And what I see happening going forward, again, and every football team, even a college football team, has role players, Paul. And we know that. And what, one of the things I'm concerned about under NIL is that parents will overvalue the marketability of their children in some of these college programs, and probably start, you know, thinking, well, you know, junior needs to get more money, needs to transfer, and junior's going to be the one that's going to be hurt. And I can recall kids growing up and coming, you know, run into them in the supermarket or in the store, and they thank me for certain things and apologize for the way their parents act. And I think NIL is going to open the door to a lot of parents doing some damage to their kids who maybe need to stay put and get that degree. Instead, they think they're worth more in the marketplace than maybe they really are.
Very interesting. I haven't heard that. Heard the coach mentioned it briefly, but I think you're right, sadly. And you know, you can control to a degree young people. You can't control their parents.
Well, I remember one situation where we were in the administration of a large youth league, and it was, you know, early in the season, and we've been there since, I don't know, 7 o'clock in the morning, and you know, on a cinder block hut, fitting, you know, everything from 7-year-old on up with jerseys and shoulder pads. And most of these kids had never worn them before. And it's like, you know, like herding a bunch of squirrels. And I can remember one 7-year-old looking at me and saying, well, my dad says I'm a extra small or a small. And I said, well, I need to try this on you anyway. And proceeded to, you know, check out what jersey it was. And the father actually got into my face and told me that I was countermanding his authority as a parent because I didn't take his kid's word as to what size he was. And I've seen parents treat volunteer coaches, and you know, as you go up the line, I mean, they certainly don't treat certain high school coaches that way, or the kid's not on the team. But a lot of times, I've seen them where they don't get their way with the high school coach, and they transfer, and usually don't have any more success where they transfer than where they started. Because they've overestimated the real value or the real ability of their child. But when you get NIL and add money into it, I can see some of these parents really doing their young men and young women a disservice.
Thank you so much, William. Great to hear from you. Billy is up next in Philly. Hello, Billy.
Hi, thanks for having me on. William is a very smart guy, isn't he? From Maryville.
He is.
The guy you just had on, he's sharp. I'm calling about a very wise thing that you just said about the NIL business. You said it's being driven by social media, and I believe that's true. But I think that's a bad driver. I don't think, by the way, that the NCAA's word is the final word on the subject. I really think that college sports are so precious and so vulnerable and so wonderful that we should continue to press for solving the whole problem at one time, not letting somebody get in early, get their foot in the door, establish a precedent, and then make other people react to them. I think that's a big mistake. That's all. And I think you should recognize it. I think you do. And to whatever extent you can urge people not to be driven by social media, because social media is, it's so instant. It comes and it goes so fast.
No, I agree with you, Billy. Social media is a wonderful tool, but it's also very destructive. There are many deleterious effects of it, and I mean somebody like me who's in the medium, you know, has to guard against letting it affect your mood, and I can only imagine what it's like for somebody 16 or 17 or 21. And I've seen people my age and older, you know, literally lose their mind over something that somebody says. So what's a young person supposed to do?
Yeah, I think it's terrible. I think that, I mean, Charles Barkley went through this once before. So there's 1,000 problems with this NIL business. I can make more money at Alabama. Is that what you're telling me? So I shouldn't go to North Carolina or North Carolina State or some other place because they're not going to get the coverage and I'm not going to get the jersey. Stop it. You've got to settle this thing in a sensible way. You got to take all the players.
But Billy, here's the issue though, and you have a leader of intercollegiate athletics, who Mark Emmert, who on Friday in the interview with our friend Alan Blinder of the New York Times essentially waved the white flag. He is now calling on Congress to bail him out, and you tell me when the last time that was a good mechanism.
I agree. We agree. That's the point. That's not good. He shouldn't be doing that. He shouldn't be caving in like that. Congress to bail him out.
But he has displayed so little leadership because he really has very little power. And I know I'm critical of him, but the commissioners, the five commissioners who run the big Power Five conferences, hold the majority of the power in intercollegiate athletics. And their obligation is to their own fiefdom. They're not. If you're the commissioner of the Big 12, you can't be concerned about east and west of you. You're concerned about what you have in your league.
Right, but the problem has to be solved with all the players in one room, with all their interests represented. It's like, you know, in America we have the best bankruptcy laws in the world, and the reason is because one guy can't grab when a company fails. The judge takes over. Everybody has to line up, and they have to solve every problem at once. So you can't, you know, chisel. And this is chiseling. And I agree with you that he's not showing great leadership. That's what he should be headed for. And I think you represent a great voice.
Billy, I am going to offer to you, and I know, and I really enjoy that a line that I hate to say because it's intellectually lazy, but I have to say it because it's true. It's too late, and there's almost nothing that can stop it. There is nothing that can stop it now, and he signaled that in the article that the time to deal with it was years ago. And a lot of people were willing, but guys like Emmert fought back and pushed back. And one other thing, we keep talking about this Alston case in the Supreme Court. Nobody knows where it's going to go, but it's possible, it's entirely possible that court could literally throw out amateur status altogether in this ruling. Mm-hmm. And then we have another issue that we haven't really spent much time talking about. They will get paid.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All I can say is I'm watching and I'm hoping.
Yeah. I appreciate your
suggestion.
Billy, thank you for suggesting that somebody could still do something about it. And I'll say this, and I'm not trying to. You don't have to hype something like this. I'm looking forward to the college football season. I'm talking to people every day. What are we going to do then? But the next 8 weeks are going to determine the future of intercollegiate athletics, both in Congress and with this Supreme Court ruling. The Supreme Court ruling could be a bust. I mean, they could write a very narrow ruling that really doesn't change anything, or just pushes it back to another court, or not pushes it back to another court, but just really doesn't solve the problem. I have a hard time believing they're going to do that, though, because the Supreme Court doesn't take on They can choose anything they want. They don't have to take these cases. They chose this for a reason. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.